Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly, and the just released yesterday, The Japanese Box and Other Stories, which, humble brag, is currently sitting at number one in short stories and anthologies. So, but enough about that. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, my co-hostess with the mostest, Allison Martin, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today, back for the second time, this time flying solo, editor extraordinaire, Vince Laguno. Did I say it right? I said it wrong. Laguno.
It's second time. Perfect.
Laguno.
Did it.
Perfect.
It's because I jinxed myself because I did it correctly the first time you were on the show. And then
it's just too many vowels. I get it.
It became like linguine in my head. And I think it's because I stopped eating gluten.
I just had a flashback to high school. Every gym teacher I ever had saw the L, the I, and the G. And, you know, gym teachers. Hey, linguine.
Like, oh, God, that's never going to get old.
No.
But we are here talking about Unspeakable Horrors 3, Dark Rainbow Rising, a collection of queer horror. And Vince, actually, before we jump into this, I'm going to say a bunch of things. You've had a huge year. You've had a huge year since last time you were here. Huge year. Your favorite person in the world, Jamie Lee Curtis, won an Oscar since the last time you were here.
She's behind you in spirit. Like,
and
literally.
I wept and cried and screamed.
I only thought of you.
And true story, while we're watching the Oscars, I had my partner, I handed him my phone, and I said, I didn't think she was going to win. I said, just in case, I said, here. So he wins. I have this genuine, crazy, screaming, crying, like a 10-year-old girl reaction. He filmed the television. I almost killed him.
You were supposed to do one thing. You had one job.
Film me having my crazy meltdown so that she could see it and invite me over for tea. But no, he films the TV. It's all right.
Well, maybe she'll see this.
Bye, guys.
Hashtag Jamie.
Hi, Jamie. Love you.
Love you.
We're not doing hot dog fingers. These are just normal fingers.
I know those are just normal fingers.
You should have worn hot dog fingers tonight. I have hot dog fingers.
I'm not surprised. That's fine.
And I have. You know. And did you both see the movie?
Yeah.
Okay. So in the back, the big joke was that she had all these awards that looked like these big black butt plugs. Well, A24 put out a black butt plug candle, and I have.
Oh my gosh.
Wow, that's lit.
That is lit. So, Jamie Lee Curtis wins an Oscar. You celebrate 1 year as the co-editor of Other Terrors, which I know I should have. I'm going to knock everything over.
Anna is prepared tonight. Any book you're going to throw at me, I have, except yours, because Amazon didn't deliver. Sorry.
Jerk. So, Other Terrors was nominated for a Shirley Jackson Award.
Yeah. There's my rock.
You got a rock.
And
all the nominees get a rock. Is that cool?
I love it.
Jackson? I like rocks.
I got my didn't win, but we got the rock.
Rocks are just as good.
Yeah.
And it was also just recently nominated for a World Fantasy Award.
Shocker of all shockers. Came out of the blue. I didn't even totally forgot that awards like even existed. And then they're like, the editor from HarperCollins is emailing. He's like, hey, guess what? I'm like, what? Wow, that's cool.
Well, that's fantasy, and you're like, last I checked, this is horror, but all right. So there had to be some crossover that you got nominated, so it's still pretty awesome. But I can understand being shocked when you're going, I'm not even in the right genre, thank you.
I wouldn't have expected that one. So that was a genuine surprise. The Shirley Jackson, I was kind of secretly crossing fingers and hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, which was cool. But World Fantasy, and that's, we're blown away. It's really cool.
It has the word world in it.
That means it's big.
I know.
It's important.
It is. Not that the Shirley Jackson Award is not important. Because,
Pet the stone.
I know. So, but we are here to talk about All Things You, but also All Things The Unspeakable Horrors Dark Rainbow Rising.
Yay.
I was telling Vince before the show that I like destroyed my book. There's like writing in it. There's a hair clip. Use it as a bookmark.
My librarian mother does not approve and she's dead.
But that's how you can tell I'm really enjoying a physical copy of a book, because I'm walking around the house with it. My dog is climbing on me and I'm like reading in a weird position. So
I'm sure you're going to say you use the book to beat the dog off of you. I'm like, so
no,
would never. No.
I did, when the dog was staring directly at my face, just do this though at one point.
The dog's just like,
yeah, because he was there. And I'm like, okay.
But he's so cute.
Just put this in front of me.
Yeah. So tell us about the whole process of this. See, this is the third volume of Unspeakable Horror.
This is the third. So back in 2008, right after my debut novel came out, The Literary Six, a guy named Chad Helder, who was running a website called, at the time, Unspeakable Horror, he had reached out to say, hey, I like your slasher novel. It's got gay characters. How cool is that? And we became really good friends. And as we're kind of, I forget who even proposed the idea or how it came out, but we said, wouldn't the kind of the branding of Unspeakable Horror be kind of like a cool catalyst for an anthology and maybe a series? You know, we have it called Unspeakable Horror and we come up with a subtitle. So the first one, which came out in 2008, was called, I don't know if you can see it, I'm going to take the glare out as best I can, Unspeakable Horror from the Shadows of the Closet.
Nice. All these monsters are coming out of the closet.
Yes.
Like Dracula's mouth is about this big.
Yes. And the skeleton's pink and there's a disco ball above them. And Jason has a pink boa on. This, to segue a little bit, this cover was done by a renowned Miami tattoo artist named Mike Pucciarelli. He goes by The Pooch. And he has, if you ever look
at
his website, his art, is all, it all revolves around Florida and theme parks. So when I saw that, I was like, ooh, like a gay theme park ride. And I commissioned him to do it. And I actually have an original piece that he did for the cover that was part of my package with him.
Can we just mail it to DeSantis? I just would like to mail it to DeSantis.
Could you imagine? Oh, he would have just a poor
thing. His brain would start to melt out of his ears.
Poor Ron.
Mind blown.
He kind of knocked it out of the park. So we didn't really know what to expect. We put out a call. We got some great stories. And next thing I know, it got nominated for a Bram Stoker Award. And then the next thing I know, it won. And it was just like right out of the box. First thing that we had ever edited. I was like, wow, this is so cool.
Now, was this the first collection you'd ever edited?
This was the first collection I'd ever edited. And what was really cool about it is, and I didn't realize the significance of it till I got back to the hotel room after the Bram Stoker Awards, which were in Burbank that year. And I started to see on my Facebook feed and all my messages, all of these gay writers from not only horror, but just from all genres congratulating us, because it was the first and still, sadly, only time in the HWA's history that an expressly LGBTQIA or queer horror anthology has ever won in that category. So that was really cool. It's history.
Cool,
it's
But
you also
cool,
know,
but
okay,
I'm still like,
been,
really?
That was 2008. That's 15 years. I'm doing the math going, nothing's sitting.
Nope. And, I'm not even sure about nominees. I'm not sure if there's been any LGBT nominees in that category, but it's the only one that's ever won. So then we kind of started talking about doing a sequel.
You
try to build. Chad didn't really want to do it, so I went that one solo. And for the theme, this one was 2000. It got delayed. Really delayed. It came out in 2017, and it was called Abominations of Desire.
Nice.
So the first one was about, you know, from the shadows of the closet. The themes were repression. And all the harm of staying in or coming out of the closet. This one was all about desire run wild. What
nice.
Happens when that desire, you know, becomes monstrous. Sometimes we repress the desire, you know, and look what happens. And sometimes we just let it loose. And what? So this was kind of a real, more, I call this the
I
sexy.
Call that my 20s.
Well, I call this my midlife crisis. But yeah, okay.
Totally fair. But I was going to say the cover, for people who are just listening, they can't see, the cover is gorgeous and it's very kind of almost Pan's Labyrinth, but the hands, instead of being the same color as the rest of the person's body, they're like black and pointed to almost talons. I don't see any eyes in them though. They just look like they're black. Maybe that's, and no then eyes. Red lipstick like mine.
Her eyes are actually covered. Yeah. But yeah, so this was, I call this the sexy one. This was the sexy one.
And so then, this is not the sexy one?
This is not the sexy one. This really was the sexy one.
Oh yeah, did you think the Eric LaRocca story was sexy?
No, I was teasing. No, seriously, it's like there are places where there's desire expressed, but we veer away from it very quickly and get back to the horror.
Oh yeah.
And then quickly.
So that that kind of just, I was, you know, resting on the laurels of that. We got involved in other terrors. And then I said, you know, there's so much going on politically right now. And, you know, those of us who are old enough to have lived through or at least a portion of other civil rights movements kind of know that for every civil right you gain and the pendulum swings one way, that pendulum is always going to swing back. That's nothing unusual. That has nothing to do with Biden, Trump, or anybody. That is the way that these things work, for better or worse. Unfortunately, because of our political climate now, that swing back to the right is particularly a vicious swing. In particular, I think more for our trans brothers and sisters than anyone, they're really taking the brunt of this particular backlash.
Hugely.
So that was where the idea kind of came from for this. So I knew I wanted it to be a kind of about that political swing of the pendulum, but I didn't want it to be a political book. So I spent a lot of time thinking, like, how am I going to phrase this? How am I going to? And then by complete circumstance, I was just kind of procrastinating. And I started watching the 2015 film It Follows, which was lensed right here in Michigan, where is my new home state since 2020. And I started thinking, I'm watching The Final Girl, and everyone's, you know, they're looking over their shoulder for this horrible personification of sex to come after them. And I'm thinking, like, God, this is the LGBTQIA community. We are always, always looking over our shoulder. I can't tell you, even in the best of times, if I go out in the city or to a restaurant or to a movie or something with my partner, you know, you still, if it's the dark of night, you're still glancing around just to make sure that, you know, no one's coming after you. So that kind of cemented the theme, and we put out the call, and you can kind of see that the interpretations of the theme were wild.
They were all over the place
in the best possible way.
Yeah.
But they did all have, even when some of them were achingly beautiful, this like such a sad sense of dread to them that like, yeah, I mean, it unfortunately it like reminded me of, you know, being in high school and struggling with, am I gay? Am I straight? Like, we didn't talk about things like bisexuality in New Hampshire in the 90s. Like, we just didn't. We don't really talk about that now.
Trust me, in Catholic school in New Jersey in the 1980s, we didn't have a gay straight student alliance either.
Yeah. I went to Catholic school in the 80s. And I didn't go to Catholic school for high school. But I remember being in high school having like a guy come up to me and go, you're a lesbian, right? And I was like, I don't. And I thought it was like a trick question because I was still thinking, am I?
Ever since. But you knew enough that you were terrified by the question.
I was terrified because I thought this is a trap because it's like some dude on the football team who was friends with somebody who asked me out who I said no to. So I'm like,
Couldn't possibly just not want to date meathead.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
We used to have in high school, the day before like the Christmas vacation would be kind of like just a hangout day in homeroom. You'd bring, everybody would bring in something to eat and you exchanged, you know, gifts with your friends. And for me, it was the worst. It was the worst day of the school year because I was so afraid that my friends would give me something, you know, like the Olivia Newton-John album or something. And it was like, you know, then
publicly.
You know, and you're like, Olivia Newton. And they're like, oh, look, he got Olivia Newton-John. Oh, no. You know, like, oh my God.
That means something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny because kids instinctively do know. I mean, you know, they they knew I was gay before I was gay. It's just, and they're, and kids are just, and I don't think this is any particular time period. I think they're horrible today. Kids are really horrible to each other.
Yeah.
Kids are really,
yeah, always. Mean. Well, this they're is awful. Why is so much horror, like, that I find really riveting is like that coming of age horror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, 'cause I'm like, you're already during a terrifying time of your life, because yes. What is worse than being a kid or a teenager?
Yes.
And then add something otherworldly, perhaps.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, that's just that segment you were just talking about with Olivia Newton-John made me think of Wishbone, Michael Thomas Ford's piece in this. And I mean, there were other ones where they had fairly young protagonists, but that one was the most just being in this kid's head and wondering about himself, wondering about others. And then some other shit happens. I won't spoil the story. That's the hard thing about an anthology like this is I can talk about a little bit of the setup, but I can't talk about any of the twists because I don't want to ruin any of it. Yeah. I mean, I can just say shoes. That probably doesn't ruin anything for anybody. No. I just say shoes. Ominous shoes.
Or if we're just saying stories that are about younger characters, yes. And we have to talk about Immaculate.
Yes.
Or we can just say Immaculate.
Just
with Mary Say's very deliberate formatting. If you notice, it's formatted without quotation marks.
Yes.
Dialogue. I thought it was, you know. I always ask as an editor, I'm like, is this deliberate? Or
did you just screw up here, hon?
Oh, it's kind of like letting me do all the heavy lifting here. She's like, no.
I know. You just deliberate. Figure out what's dialogue. Yeah, so that's your job.
And it's funny because I enjoyed it and I was reading with my eyes and it took me a while to realize. I'm like, wait a second. There are no quotation marks in here. And I realized I'd listened to a book maybe about a year and a half ago that I really enjoyed, but I'd listened to it. And then I started looking at the reviews and there were a lot of one-star reviews because they're like, they didn't use quotation marks. And I'm going, well, if you listen to the audible, it wouldn't have made a difference.
Right.
But I know that it was a deliberate choice. And I don't know why anybody would be like, you know, they didn't use the same formatting. I would use therefore one star.
Yeah. I mean, have you read some people's reviews? I mean,
they're dumb. A lot of times they're just nonsense, but there was not just one person. It was a lot of people were just so affronted by the lack of quotation marks.
I like it. It
didn't bother me at all. And like I said,
it gives there, like if there's an urgency to it when there's no quotation marks.
I'm too anal retentive from that Catholic school English class kind of thing. So personally, it gives me anxiety.
Yeah.
I had to once she said that's the latest, I'm like, okay, flip through. It's done. Because I just had to
I didn't edit that one. It bothered me at hives.
Yeah, it gave me the vapors.
I'm just hot here. I don't have the vapors. This is really hot in SoCal right now. Fine. You're fanning yourself with a lammy. I can fan myself with my daughter's hat. See, it's a rainbow that I have that she designed herself with fabric pens.
I love it.
I'll fan myself with the anthology.
With
the
anthology.
Probably
better. I'll fan really slow.
Oh, so you can see.
You're like, look at the cover while I fan myself.
Right.
So, keep putting it down.
So when we, when you just put out a call for this, or were there certain authors that you invited specifically?
I always do my anthologies, kind of a mix. Mm-hmm. I'll usually have 8 to 10 people that I want to have in the anthology. The list normally has to be about 14 to 16 because you're going to get a bunch that say no. Someday, you know, when I'm really old and I don't care anymore, I want to just call out all the people that said no to me.
Remember that time you said no and then we were nominated for a World Fantasy Award?
They were busy and they had deadlines. Exactly. It was not a personal thing.
Well,
sure.
It is funny. It is funny. I'm becoming like this little miniature Ellen Datlow. I have a thing. I'll invite you 3 times.
And then you're done.
And if you have said no on the 3rd time, I'm not going to ask you again. Because, I mean, my anthologies are not like I'm doing one a year like Ellen. Mine are spaced out.
Yeah.
So it's like if I'm inviting you in 2008 and then 2017 and 2023 and you don't have time, okay, we're done.
So thanks, who's already off the list, Vince?
I'm not that old yet.
No, I know. I just thought maybe I could slip it past you. You just
it's so
in the moment.
There are 2 people off the list.
Okay, well, yeah. there were
a bunch that said no to this one. One did not respond, which was very rude.
So rude. Ghosting is rude, guys.
Ghosting is rude. Even when it's horror, you cannot ghost somebody. You are not an actual ghost.
But I got the most of the people that I wanted, so that was good. And then I put out the open call because I've always said this, and I make this my promise, and I said it in public, so I'm held accountable. All of my anthologies will, you know, in some way, shape, or form, have an open call element, because I think it's important to discover those new voices and to give people that shot.
Yes, because there were, you know, there were a lot of names I recognized and knew in this book, but then there were plenty that I didn't, and I was thrilled. Some of the ones that I didn't know the authors for.
And isn't ended that funny? Up being because then you want to follow, like, see what they do next.
Yeah. Well, and I was like flipping to the back, reading their bio, going on the social media, like, am I friends with this person yet?
Yeah, and here's my thing. I was trying to tag as many as I could, and then some of them weren't on Instagram, and I'm just like, I'm running out of space, so I got as many as I could. But it's like, if you have a common name, please put like an initial or write author next to it so I know who you are among. Yeah. Like, I'll have to like look at 5 different profiles, like, that's a real estate agent in Georgia. I don't think that's the one who wrote this. Like, you know, oh, this guy has a skull as a profile. That's probably him. All right. Yeah, yeah, we're good.
Or this one's in her bra and panties. I don't think she's an author.
She could be.
She could be.
But probably not in this collection. Just, I mean, you never know. But I loved doing that. And I commented, I tagged as many people as I could. And one of the authors responded, like, oh, this is so cool. And I'm like, yours was one of the ones I just loved. Cause that was, okay, now I'm going to look at the name because I'm going to get it wrong. But it was Matthew L. Reyes is Such a Lovely Place. And I adored that story. And now, of course, I'm going to be like stalking him, nicely stalking him, like so
benevolently stalking.
That's what I mean. When I say stalk, I usually mean like on social
media. I loved that one so much. I think, housing authority, like homeowners associations are
terrifying.
They're so terrifying. When we were living with my mom for a while and there was an HOA, and it was so scary because it was like, oh no, our grass is a little bit longer than it's supposed to be. Oh no, we put our garbage can out too early. Oh, we drove 6 miles an hour down our road as opposed to the 5 that were allowed.
Right. This is crazy.
And like the mean letters we would get.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and it's I live in a place, we don't have one, but I live next to Irvine, which basically is a homeowners association because it's the Irvine company. And we joke that the Irvine company, their logo looks suspiciously similar to Hydra. So we just say, you know, Hail Hydra whenever we see Irvine company. But it's like, imagine an entire city is like that. And that's like, that's why I don't live there. But my husband works there, so we have to go back. But it's terrifying. And he captured it so perfectly and weaving in that also that feeling of, oh, well, we're outsiders, but can we become part of this group? And what does it take? How much are we expected to conform? How much do we need to look the way that you think we need to look? What expressions can we have and can't we have? And then he even included the feelings of abandonment by the people who lived in the city. And it's like, oh, well, you're selling out to the suburbs. Like, the suburbs, no.
And his story was, Matthew's story was one of the ones that came in through the open call.
Did it really?
When I read it, I got an immediate Stepford Wives vibe.
Yes.
I just felt like the remake of Stepford Wives, you know, that where they go to that town and it's all just so perfect.
Yeah. Welcome to Irvine. That's what it's like. I don't live there. But Regina thinks we should call, you know, Benevolent Stalker, great title, or a band name. I don't play any instruments other than clarinet. No one needs to see that. Go ahead.
I was going to say that was one of my favorites in the book. Maybe. And it was truly, truly unsettling. And I could see it as a movie so well that I'm like,
it would work.
It would work because I feel like everybody, almost everybody, has had some sort of dealings with an HOA.
Well, and
or heard stories about them.
Yes. Right.
Or just like those neighbors that are really perfect and they just glare at your lawn.
Oh, we had ones who put in fake lawn, like a couple doors down. And then now they have like a little no dog pooping sign. And it's like, we don't even have a dog. And I'm still kind of
You should just make your son poop in their yard.
Don't give him ideas. Training was hard enough.
Always the neighbors where they eventually dig up the skulls in the backyard of all the people they've killed.
Of course. And I don't want to know.
Where I used to live on Long Island, the Gilgo Beach guy. They dug up people, you know, they've dug up things in his backyard. And he's like an architect and, you know, perfect little suburban house kind of thing.
Standing, but no.
Yep, gotta watch those people with the nice houses.
Regina wants me to play kazoo. I'm not playing kazoo. That's fine. maybe harmonica if I could ever figure that out, but no kazoo. But you know, these stories, they do come from all these different kind of backgrounds, and the author's background and the author's experience. I do love how that one felt like it, like you said, it could be a movie. And that's one of the things I was realizing. So many books would translate better to a series, but short stories would make good movies, because a book doesn't translate. Like, if you guys look at a script for a movie, it is not as long as a book by any means. And like, this one had places where I could see it very easily transferring to screen, and you know, doing more scenes to fill out the time and to raise the tension. Sure.
Or even like an anthology series, like, you know, Creepshow on Shudder, or something like that, where you just had, you know, this
each this episode
gay horror anthology, you know, Unspeakable Horror. I know Hollywood's not listening right now because they're on strike.
I know.
They're not allowed to. They're on strike.
Maybe they're watching because they have nothing else to do. So Hollywood, if you hear me when you're back to work,
Call Vance. Also, I went to school for theater, so just like throwing that out there.
There you go. There's a leading lady in one of them.
I know, I'm like, who would I want to be?
You could be one of the HOA ladies.
Oh my gosh. I actually played a role of somebody in like an HOA in a play.
Did you?
Yeah. I was very obnoxious.
Played it very waspy?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You change how you talk, like try to talk through your nose and sound really nasally.
Nice. Oh my gosh, it was so long ago. let me just see which other ones I loved so much.
I was just going to say it. The whole anthology thing, I was talking with some other authors and people were asking, you know, how do you even get these anthologies going? So I like that you explained how you and Chad, who was the one who wrote The Tattoo Artist. So it's funny that then you said the cover, the other one was done by a tattoo artist. Right. Pooch is not in that poem. I read it. I didn't see Pooch's name in there. The tattoo artist.
You know, he's not in there. But really, look up his website. I think the website's called Pooch Island.
Is it P-O-O-C-H?
Uh-huh.
I'm definitely looking it up.
And you'll see all of his paintings, and he exhibits them in galleries and everything. And they're all this it's just like his response to growing up in that suburban, but theme park, touristy Florida kind of area. It's really so cool.
Chad's poem references everything from Bela Lugosi to Anubis, but no Pooch. I did not see Pooch. So.
No Pooch. I'm definitely going to look it up. I loved, I don't speak Spanish, so I'm going to pronounce all of this wrong, like Un Lamento de Flores.
Close enough. I speak a little Spanish. Close enough.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. And again, this is another one that was achingly beautiful. It was a love story at its core.
Well, and it was a bit of magical realism in there too. Yeah. So if this one wants to show up under fantasy, you can see where that one does, because that one had those. And that's one of the things I love about this anthology, because you're just all over the map here with subgenres and things. And obviously some of them are just outright poems, but others, you've got something that feels very poetic, and others that have very more terse writing or more intense writing. So you let each person shine rather than be like, okay, to be in this anthology, you're going to fit in this little mold over here.
Yeah. It's funny because I really, and it's going to sound strange, but I actually really, when I'm reading the stories, I mean, unless it's like some hardcore, you know, science fiction, she put on a spacesuit and took a spacewalk. I don't even notice that it's a fantasy, or, you know, I don't really notice the genre. I really get taken in by the writing. The writing has to capture it, because I love, just as a writer, I love the symmetry of words, and I love that the power when images come together through words. So to me, the way to my anthologist heart is always just through gorgeous writing. And I think that's maybe why you see that kind of multi-genre approach. It's not deliberate. I'd love to take credit for it, but
You're still taking credit.
But I think that
I'll
also
take the World Fantasy Award, but you know.
Yeah, do that. Well, but also I think some of it has to do with the fact that you are doing an open call and reaching out to different people. And once you kind of see what you have there, you don't want five that are all of a similar flavor. So it does end up feeling very well-rounded, rather than like, okay, everything here has the exact same feel. It's one of the things I love about an anthology, whether it's one person's anthology or a collection among different artists, is that feeling of kind of a ride and a tour, like a tasting menu, rather than like, oh, it's this again. Okay, I got that. Like, we have something else here to offer.
Right.
This one's, it's all over the map, really, literally. And you do have one kind of spacey, because I would say Queen of Dirt's End is science fiction fantasy with a bit of horror in there.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit.
There's no spacesuit. But
no spacesuit.
But I mean, you could also argue that
surrealism going on there for sure. Yeah.
And then like Eric LaRocca's piece, you could call crime because that is definitely a lot happening there.
He's
intense.
I have such an admiration for this young crop of up and coming horror writers. They are just so fearlessly just in your face. And they put it all on the table, you know, where we were always taught, you know, hold back a little bit, pull that back a little bit. That's too much.
Oh, nobody held back here.
And gals, they are just going for it.
And it's gorgeous. Yeah. The dorky part of me loved so much that there were two New Hampshire references, at least that I got in Paul Tremblay's and, of course, Eric LaRocca's being New Englanders.
I'm going to say Paul probably has to talk to his wife about ruining another vacation spot because every time we turn around, like, so you can't go back there again, can you? Look what you just did. Now look what you did, Paul.
I have to wonder if and as somebody who has a bear problem in their yard, that one
interpretation of that theme was so unique and such a cool spin on the theme.
I loved it.
Approached it from, and that's, you know, I've gotten some criticism. I've gotten called out by one or two people online where they'll be like, well, if it's an, you know, if it's a queer anthology, it should be all LGBT writers. And I reject that because I think that literature and anthologies in particular are richer when you bring everyone to the table. And yes, as queer people, certainly we have the perspective and these are our stories to tell and we're on the inside looking out, but how fascinating it is to play with a few and invite a few people in who are going to be from the outside looking in and to see their interpretation. And I've done that in all my anthologies.
And it was, his story was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And never once did I feel like he was saying like this is the way it is. And this is everyone's experience, blah. It was a relationship.
They're very intimate. Exactly. And you were sorrowful at the end of it.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of them left me that way, but that one was the most bittersweet and beautiful to me as far as how it resolved. And I don't want to say more than that. But it's also, I mean, the dominant voices in here, there are more LGBTQ. Do the acronyms too.
As there should
LGBTQ plus writers in it and a few allies. It's not mostly allies and a few handful. Right. So I understand if people are criticizing, but I think if they looked at the overall proportion, the proportions are probably not what they're maybe thinking. Maybe it's just because it's a big name that they recognize and go, I know he's not. It's like, he's one of the allies. And last I checked, he's written other books that also have a gay couple. That's now a movie. And I saw
that. Exactly. He'd
be okay with that. Like, he wouldn't be like,
writing is kind of like acting. You know, I reject this piece where, you know, straight actors can't play gay and gay actors can't. This is bullshit. They call it acting for a freaking reason.
Exactly.
If you're a good actor and can sell the role, why is it not your role to play? It's the same thing with a story. If you can write a character, if I'm a male and I can write a convincing and good and authentic female character, why can't I write a female character? Why, if you're straight, can't you write a gay character? I mean,
it just comes back to what you said about authenticity, and people can tell when the authenticity isn't there.
Yeah.
And that's why people have those things. Oh, men writing women. Oh, it's terrible. Right. Well, because sometimes it is, but usually if the man is a good writer overall, he's probably fine with that.
Right.
If he's not a good writer at all, he's probably going to be even worse with writing women. Right. But
I know. Then all of a sudden you go like, do you even know a woman?
And with all of the tools and the safeguards that we put into play in our industry and writing in particular, like sensitivity readers and all that, there's no reason why we can't embrace that because that's a way of keeping everything more authentic and doing it that way. But yeah, I mean, I'm very careful too on all of the backs of the anthologies. It clearly says writers from the LGBT and horror communities come together to write this. So it's not just saying that it's all LGBT writers. We definitely, you know, have to celebrate. And I want the allies sitting at our table.
Yeah, I love that. Can I ask when you fell in love with horror?
Yes, I fell in love with horror probably when I was a kid in the 70s, and I would say although I had one formative experience I'll mention in a minute, it was probably all of those at the time, those made-for-TV movies like Trilogy of Terror with Karen Black running around from that horrible Zuni doll, scared the living crap out of me. I don't know if I said that right. Zuni doll, is that how you say it?
Z-U-N-I, yeah, I know what you mean.
Tribal fetish doll, yeah. It falls off and it comes after, mm-hmm. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Gargoyles. The men in the green suit that take poor, what's her name, and fly away with her. That was horrible. And then the other one, what was the other one that scared the bejesus out of me? Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Well, now you are.
Darby. And yeah. Those little voice, Sally, we're coming for you, Sally. And
yeah.
Then she does the camera, and it flashes on the little green see people. It.
Yeah.
Oh, kill me. But
yeah. Love
probably
it.
What cemented it was when I was 8 years old, my dad took me to see Jaws.
That'll do it.
It took, no joke.
Have you ever gone back in the water?
4 successive tries to see all of Jaws. First time, my poor father, he was, rest in peace. He was a saint. The first time we get there, doodum, doodum, poor naked Chrissy gets slammed into the buoy and I'm already in tears. Daddy, can we go?
Oh, no.
And my poor father's like, sure, we can go.
Second, I feel like Jaws, the logo hadn't even flashed up on the screen yet by that.
I think the second time I get up to when Richard Dreyfuss is under and the head pops out at the daddy, can we go? But what happened was by the,
I think it was the fourth, you?
It was horrible. And he kept going. My dad,
he's like, awesome. I really want to see this movie.
My dad was so awesome. And when I finally saw it, I remember having this sense of pride. Like for me, I was not an athletic kid. I was not, you know, I think I was a Cub Scout, but I was not the kid who's going to earn all these little, you know, things for chainsawing a tree out in the backyard.
That's not a badge, but
that
okay.
wasn't me. So for me, this was like a badge of courage that I survived movie. And then I was hooked. You know, then it was like, you know, then when I saw Halloween and Jamie Lee Curtis
that's when your life completely changed.
My poor father got dragged to every slash and dice and kill 'em movie. And he sat there so patiently. What'd you think, Dad? What'd you think? Oh, it was good. Yeah. Jamie Lee screamed again and she fell a lot. Yeah. Okay.
She fell a lot, but she always gets back up. That is the story.
She always got back up. Well, and I think too, as a gay kid, I think I definitely always kind of related to the otherness, and especially the otherness in the final girl, because the other, you know, the way they always kind of stereotype that final girl, she was like the nice one, the virgin one. She didn't do any drugs.
She reads books.
She read books. She was
the one babysitting on a Friday.
No drugs, read a lot of books. You know, that was me.
I remember the first time I saw Halloween, I was babysitting and all of my friends were like out and I was just like, and it was on TV. So a lot of it was like cut out, but I was just like, this is my future. The house faced the woods.
Responsible for those kids and now you're watching a movie. Yeah. Where, no, not good.
I know. I'm like, no. But at the same time, movie. I'm like, I love this.
Yeah. But no, I loved it. Then I never turned back. It was always horror.
And you're such an amazing cheerleader for the community too. Like I love, just online, like everything. You're so supportive and you have such a genuine love. And like the way you organize your anthologies, like you can tell there's not a click there too. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like, this is this little club that we always have the same.
Well, there's going to be a club of the people who said no, and they're in trouble now.
There's going to be a bad club.
They're on the list.
No, I'm just like, I'm looking at this, and they're all over the place in terms of styles and even time periods. I mean, you've got historical fiction in here. There wouldn't be a way to have a club for these people, because otherwise, other than an anthology like this, where are you going to find all of these writers together? Because they are writing such different things. And I think it's funny because I know there are people who are like, I don't read genre fiction, or I don't read science fiction, or I don't read.
I'm sorry to make that face.
Sorry, I'm already laughing because I see Regina, the ones who said no. Regina's got your next title.
I was going to say Unspeakable Horrors for the ones who said no.
Ooh, I like it. Dun, dun, dun. I like it, Regina. I like it.
I love it. But I having all these different styles, like I loved the real tour we have here, even in terms of when these things took place, because some of them, very few of them had anything that was an actual date. I think Wishbone was one of the few that actually had a date in it. Otherwise, everything was like, okay, I'm getting the feel. We're about this era, like when we're in a Spanish hacienda. Okay, but maybe we're in Latin America. I don't really know when this is, but it's clearly not modern day. And some of them, okay, I think this is after the Vietnam War and we're in the South. With that one, I think was for, I know this one, hold on. I have to look. Lavenders.
Yes, Lavender.
I had to find it.
And then we had a familiar song, which had pirates.
And an octopus.
An octopus.
That's science fantasy there, too. So I'm
World horror, here we go.
Claiming as much science fantasy.
But isn't that, wasn't Matthew, didn't I read his, like, was he like a science, he wrote science something?
Which one?
Because he wrote a familiar song.
So that's Matthew
song.
Blaine Hartung.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that one was incredibly lyrical. Like there were ones that were poems, and then
Berlin-based biochemist.
That is an unusual bio. I wouldn't have tagged that because I'm like, that can't be right.
Far and wide,
yeah.
The trick. Well, I mean, the thing is too, and I think this has been my kind of my sweet spot in putting these anthologies together. I like themed anthologies, so when you put a themed anthology together, you want to consciously cast that net far and wide because you know. If you're doing an anthology about, you know, bird horror or something, you know, you don't want everyone that's going to write the same story. You want to think who's going to...
The Raven, part 12.
I was thinking that, but I didn't want to say it.
I felt like this theme was almost like one of those old, another 80s reference, you know, the Stretch Armstrong dolls. And I wanted writers who were really going to, like, pull it and twist it and
Stretch Armstrong.
Crazy shit with it. And I think that's what we got with this.
I think you nailed it. I mean, you have stuff like the mikveh, that's Zachary Rosenberg's, and that's set, a Jewish couple being attacked by Cossacks. And I'm like, I don't have a date for this either, but it's, again, not current day.
Right.
And again, these have such different takes on even what the acceptance is within the community and whether it's a community that embraces and then it's outsiders or the community doesn't embrace and it's the community. So that whole idea of, you know, the dark rainbow rising, sometimes even a community that does accept then gets attacked by people from outside who are like, how dare you be accepting of people who aren't all in the same little box.
Right. Or even sometimes, and I think that's where we are now culturally. If you look at what's happening with poll numbers and stuff, it's kind of like, and I'm going to phrase this the wrong way, but it's almost like, you know, the gay agenda, so to speak. It's almost for a lot of people who have been tolerant and accepting, there are certain aspects now that are just pushing people too far, and they're starting to come back a little bit, especially with the trans issues. I think there's some very complicated, and I think there's some very... some touchstone kind of triggering issues within the trans community with the sports.
With
the gender-affirming care for particularly under 18. There's a lot of discussion that should be had. Unfortunately, we can't have it. This is just not what we do today in 2023. So
no, we like to argue and shout people down and tell everybody that they're wrong.
Right, and if God forbid, if somebody asks a question or maybe questions and says, well, what if, well, you're a bigot, you're a transphobe, you're that. And we're not, you know, I think there's some people that have been generally in that LGBT basket, but I think that Tea part now, you know, has really made that basket go a little bit farther. And I think people are, we're at a really interesting crossroads, but I think it's important regardless of how that basket gets pushed. I hope the G and the B does not abandon the T.
Agree.
The T is us the whole time, and we need to now be there. You know, even if there are issues that maybe we're not quite understanding. You know, you don't have to understand something to have compassion. There's a lot I don't understand, and I can still be compassionate. I can still be a kind person. I could still not want to murder someone. You know, and I just get
on the page.
Yeah, exactly. Murder them on the page. Exactly.
Murder them on the page. Everybody who said no, they're going to be victims and kind of like the final girl version, but author's edition, the editor takes his revenge
on the people who said no.
Yeah.
There's the title.
Since you have been absolutely fantastic as always. Right before we finish up, can you tell us what you're working on now? Are you working on anything? Are you just resting?
He's just polishing the stone and his other awards and wishing for more to just roll in.
Actually, we have another prominent co-editor and I are teaming up, and we've just pitched another anthology idea to a prominent agent who is shopping the deal for us because we want this one to go to a major publisher.
Nice.
So that should hopefully, we should have a home for that very soon. We're in the process of inviting some of the name authors so we can sell the project.
Yeah.
I am considering an Unspeakable Horror 4. I'm thinking I wanted to do something about queering Halloween, which is a lot of fun.
Sorry.
And I just recently actually completed my first poetry collection that I submitted to a very well-known, renowned independent press through an editor that helped me work. And I'm waiting word from her whether they're going to accept it or not. And
what? You don't edit your own work?
Just putting lots of short stories and things out there.
Fantastic. Keep them busy. You're amazing.
Regina's just giving us terrible ideas. Let me give you a non-contributor's copy, and its pages are steel serrated. Regina, stop it.
I like Regina.
Regina's awesome. Everyone who watched this live or is watching the replay or just listening to the audio, if you're listening to the audio, you can't see that I'm holding up the book again. Please make sure you go check out Unspeakable Horror 3, Dark Rainbow Rising. We are going on a little bit of hiatus here at Vox Vomitus because...
1 week.
Just 1 week?
Just 1 week.
I thought it was two. What day is it now?
Today's the 2nd.
All right, that's right.
And I will be away from the keyboard next week, but then the following week we have Paul Tremblay.
Yeah, I was going to say, Paul Tremblay.
It's already August, and somehow, I don't know how that happened. But
I feel like we've had Paul almost every August since we started the show, because the first time he came on our show, I begged him because it was the day before my birthday, and I was like, for my birthday, can you please come on the show? I know you don't know me.
Paul,
he said,
benevolent.
He's great.
He's really,
I know. When I finally met him in person, I was just like, gosh, you're so nice.
You guys, yours is the best show to be on. Of course,
it is the best show to be on.
Please.
Well, we
thank you. Yeah, you just keep telling everybody that, though.
Yeah. That's why we like doing it.
Thank you, Vince. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, Vox Vomitus fans. August, whatever, not next week, but the week after, 16th?
I think that's right.
16th, Paul Tremblay.
Back to school.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.